years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Coming up in just seconds, you and I are going to learn about the single most disgusting radio promotional event in history and what happened to it. But first, Dr. Dave, weather. When you look around at work and you see certain situations, people there, policies, you indulge sometimes while you're eating the tuna fish sandwich and you think, who the hell is responsible for this? Like, who really is responsible? Now, at WPHT, and in fact, all of Odyssey, Philadelphia, the most beautiful facility ever built, when Walter M. Sterling started six nights a week, there were people who were mumbling in the corner. By the way, how did we get him? And the answer to the question is, on the phone. Andy Bloom was in charge of WIP, the real radio station, and WPHT, the other radio station. He was in charge. And with enormous pressure from corporate, he put me on the air on WPHT. Now, he could have sat up and said, no, I'm not going to do that. But he didn't. He actually blinked, and I got on the air. And Andy, I have been on here for 10 years. Can you believe that? Where's Andy? Andy, hello. Hello, hello. Hello, hello. Andy, are you there? I don't hear Andy. Well, listen, it's a tight as could be network radio show. Do you hear me, Sean? Why can't he hear me? Okay, well, I wouldn't want any attitude with that. Oh, my God. Jeez. All right, Andy Bloom. Let me explain to you who Andy Bloom is. You ready? It's exciting. He is a longtime radio programmer, best known for introducing Howard Stern's radio syndication and for putting Walter Sterling on WPHT. He was operations manager for WIP and WPHT from 2007 to 2015, which is Teutonic Plate time in radio, among many other stations. He also served as communications director. Listen carefully. This is a grown-up we're dealing with. He served as communications director for Congressman Mike Turner, who is currently the chair of the House Intelligence Committee. He is a contributor for BroadandLiberty.com. He's president of Andy Bloom Communications. And you can follow Andy on X at AndyBloom.com. AndyBloom.com. But that's not important. What's important is two things. There are very few programmers in American radio like Andy Bloom who sit up and say, we're going to do this and own it, take the initiative, run with it, try stuff, innovate, and are on with Rich Zeoli a lot. There aren't a lot of programmers like that. He comes from a long line of what I call real program directors. There are two kinds of program directors. There are program directors who get a memo and enact it. And there are program directors who say, we're going to do this. They might get the idea on their way to work, driving in, listening to the horrible morning show and going, yeah, we're going to do this. And then they do something and it gets on the air in 10 minutes. That's Andy Bloom. There aren't many left. He comes from a long line of them, like Tom Bigby, who created WIP. Can Andy hear me? All right, what should I do? Should I come back to Andy? Should we go back to him? Yes? No? I can keep talking. Keep talking for a little bit while the technology of a telephone is figured out. This has nothing to do with our very skilled operators, nothing to do with our very skilled sound engineers. We have, if you rub wool near our phone system, everything will short out. No, No, really. If you stand too close to it and your body is hot, it'll short out the phone system. Maybe you have one of those like that at work. Maybe you have that, something like that at work. But you and I are going to talk to Andy Bloom about an event in radio. We're going to thank you for shouting. We're going to talk to Andy Bloom about an event in radio that was the envy of the radio industry. And what was suspicious and weird about it was that radio people, the way they define a good idea is, quote, who else is doing it? Where else is it being done? Throw a new idea at a radio executive in a suit. They'll look at you and rather than saying, hey, good idea, let's try it. Innovative, thanks for the creativity, you should win an award. No, they'll go, who else is doing it? Where else is it being done? Which to me diminishes the idea instantly. If someone else is doing it, it's worthless in my mind. Always has been. But the thing, I heard you. But the thing about it that's interesting is this particular event, which was called Wing Bowl in Philadelphia, based at WIP, was never copied. It was so insanely successful, oddly, in the radio industry, it was never copied. And Andy Bloom supervised this event for many, many years. And Andy Bloom, welcome to Sterling Every Damn Night.
Thanks for having me, Walter.
It's exciting to have you because, as I explained, while during the period of time where the phone technology was unresponsive and steam-driven, is that you actually stepped up and put me on WPHT. It was 10 years ago, Andy. 10 freaking
hard
years.
Hard to believe, isn't it?
It's hard to believe because I'm on for 10 years, but that's only because it's Sunday night and all the executives are drunk and doing something unimportant. However, you put it on, and as I explained, with tremendous pressure from corporate, you could have said, no, I'm not doing it, and they would have had to back down, but you blinked, and you put me on the air, and I've been eternally grateful to you for that, even though the people of Philadelphia have not been. But you supervised Wing Bowl for many years, and I want to talk about what happened to it, and I want to talk about its impact. But first, because this is a national radio show on giant radio stations across the country, take a moment, take a breath, and explain what Wing Bowl was.
Well, first of all, I'm probably not the best person to speak about Wing Bowl, okay? I was not the person who created it. I came into it about 15 years into its history. The creation was done by Al Morganti and Angelo Cataldi of the WIP Morning Show, so I just happened to luck into it and be there for some of the great moments of it. But I'll tell you a little bit about the history as I know it. It started as a small chicken wing eating contest in the lobby of what was then the Wyndham Franklin Hotel. And in the beginning, there were about 200 people who were there. The prize was a hibachi barbecue because that's what they had in the prize closet. It was held, the first one, on the Friday before the Super Bowl in 1993 because at the time, the Philadelphia Eagles were perennial losers and it looked like they would never make the Super Bowl. And the morning show was trying to create an event of their own to give people something to do for the Super Bowl weekend. The idea for chicken wings came from Al Morganti, who was known as Hockey Al because he'd been to Buffalo many times and was familiar with the Anchor Bar and chicken wings. So after the first one, the event became successful. They thought it was a success. They decided to do it again. It grew. They moved it into a large sports bar. Then it became moved into something called the Electric Factory, which was the home base of the big concert promoter in Philadelphia. And then with the help of the mayor, then governor, Ed Rendell, it became who was a regular WIP morning show guest. It moved to the Spectrum. And then eventually what was then called the Wachovia Center, which is now the Wells Fargo Center, which is where, for the moment, the 76ers and the Flyers play. To describe Wing Bowl, it was kind of like Mardi Gras meets a chicken wing eating contest, and without question was the biggest, most spectacular, reoccurring radio promotion ever. And as I said, I'm not the best person to describe it. if your listeners really want to understand Wing Bowl, what I'd suggest is...
No, stop. It's not NPR. They don't want to understand anything. I want you to describe what it looked like. What did it look like? What did Wing Bowl look like with thousands of disgusting Philadelphians eating wings? What did it look like, Andy Blum?
Well, it looked like a chicken wing eating contest with Mardi Gras going on in the middle of it. So you had a group of usually somewhere around, I guess, 20 eaters. And what I think really turned it into the big event was something that was called, some people called the Wingettes. And the Wingettes were scantily clad women. And it just became a spectacle. And I do want to get the plug in. It's not my plug. The guy who really made it big is the morning guy named Angelo Cataldi, one of the most talented radio people I've ever met. And I've worked with a lot of the big ones. Angelo wrote a book that came out last year around the holidays called Loud. And he devotes a lot of pages to Wing Bowl. And Angelo knows it, lived it much better than I did. If people really want to understand Wing Bowl, get his book Loud. And that's a plug for him. And look, I don't get a dime for it.
Andy, we'll sell books, but first you have to get them interested in this event. Now, there are two things you said, that very large men were eating wings, surrounded by very scantily clad women. And I want to know more about the women and about how much they ate, and that'll come up in just seconds. You and I are talking to Andy Blum, who put me on WPHT 10 years ago. Rather than running around the country and taking credit for it, he's hidden under a rock about it, just like Jared Hart, the program director, who I used to keep saying, Jared, you've launched a syndicated show. Do you have any idea how hard that is? Why aren't you running around taking credit for it? And then he had to call his wife and get permission to eat lunch. I'm Walter M. Sterling. Good evening. This is Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
One sad man. We're not talking about P. Diddy. Strippers on the loose. Later, Sterling Every Damn Night.
Hi, I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I tell the story of the woman who would sell her car to potential victims, only to steal it back and then sell it again. Coming up in moments on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Botched heist, pinches well-fed woman, people of Walmart. Later, Sterling Every Damn Night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line, 888-688-WALT.
Call Walter 855-839-1210.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by Harvey Holiday.
Late on a Sunday night, it's Holiday with love music, and it's so sad to see good love go bang.
One of my heroes is Andy Blum. Andy Blum is a brilliant programmer who I've known for 25 years, ever since he was head of programming at Greater Media, a real radio company. And he's a good friend, and he's a brilliant man. Andy Blum is talking about something that I've been fascinated about for years, which is Wing Bowl, a promotional big deal event happened once a year in Philadelphia. And the reason I wanted to talk to Andy Blum was first so he could describe it, because I never went to it. I was terrified to go to it. I was afraid I'd be eaten by the WIP sales department. But it ended. And I saw that, and I'm like, wait a minute, when did it end, and why did it end? Mr. Bloom, explain away.
Well, where would you like me to start? Can we talk about how it got so big before we talk about how it ended?
Of course, it's up to you.
So look, I mentioned that it was held at the Wells Fargo Center, and if you're not in Philadelphia, that might not mean a lot, but that's 20,000 people showing up for a radio promotion at 6 o'clock in the morning. For the first 15 years or so, it was free, but crowd control became a problem because there was a lot more than 20,000 people showing up. So when the doors were shut, now we had thousands of people showing up, staying in the parking lot. So around the time I came to WIP and Wing Bowl, somewhere around 2007, 2008, it became a ticketed event. Tickets were a nominal fee, $10, and the proceeds went to the Police Survivors Fund. Always sold out. Everybody at the station was always hit up for tickets. It was a big deal. Wing Bowl would kick off Super Bowl weekend, and it really was an unofficial holiday in Philadelphia. I don't have actual figures on this, but I would take a bet that as many men in Philadelphia missed work in Philadelphia on the Friday before the Super Bowl as the Monday after the Super Bowl. And I do know this for a fact. It was the biggest day of the year for the gentlemen's clubs in Philadelphia. They were, when I tell you they were packed, they would bring in quote-unquote out-of-town talent and big-name talent. The prizes became outrageous. We were giving away well over $100,000, and I think by the end it became closer to $200,000 in cash, cars, and jewelry. Prizes in cash were, I think, up to $25,000. We were giving away two cars a year. Jewelry, we had like a Super Bowl ring made by Steven Singer Jewelers. That was like a Super Bowl ring that was worth $10,000+. So the prizes were spectacular. It really, as I said, was most spectacular reoccurring promotion.
That is so cool. Now, Andy Bloom, who used to run WIP, a very serious and important station, or as we like to say,
I don't know
in the hallways,
if it was a serious station.
No, it wasn't serious. As we like to say in the hallways, it's all about WIP, Walter. Yes, it's all about WIP. Now, in 2 minutes, why did this end? Because this was an amazing event, Andy Bloom. Why did this end? And I'm asking innocently. I don't know why it ended.
Well, and in 2018, I wasn't there, so I left it in 2016. So I have limited information and can't answer the question specifically, but here's what I do know. Shortly after the 2017 Wing Bowl, the company that owned WIP and WPHT up until that point was CBS. CBS Corporation exited the radio business and sold its radio division to the station's current owners, Odyssey. The lawyers, and I mean CBS's lawyers, were always nervous, and rightly so, about Wing Bowl. Part of my job, what I brought to the situation, was keeping lawyers and management at bay. It was my job to turn no's into maybes and then figure out how to get what Angelo and Al wanted to accomplish. And if you have more time, I can tell you stories about bringing the bucking bull into the into Wing Bowl. That getting the lawyers to sign off on that is a good story unto itself. So what I think is maybe the lawyers and the new ownership were uncomfortable with the risk, the negative publicity. Maybe it was a sign of the time. Remember, you had the Me Too movement going on. Maybe after the Eagles won the Super Bowl in 2018, it seemed unnecessary. In his book, Loud, Angelo refers to that he was the only one, including the rest of the morning show, who wanted to do one last Wing Bowl finale.
All right, I heard you, Sean.
Sterling on Sunday. Inspired by Anna Kendrick.
So, and now there's a scene in the movie that I understand was pretty uncomfortable. You guys were in the shower together.
Uncomfortable was the best day of my life.
All news, more news. Day and night, around the clock, it's all news. You
get it all when you set your dial to stirring every damn night. Stirring every damn night. Stirring every damn night. Lesbians.
I don't even think he's gay.
You really shouldn't assume someone's sexual orientation, but he absolutely was.
Well, if he's gay with an ass like that, he's got worse problems than my assumption.
Deborah.
Boom, boom, Hollywood. Stirring every damn night.
There's Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood in Hollywood live. Very exciting to come on after Lesbians in Space Who Wear Sports Bras. Do you know why we have Lesbians in Space Who Wear Sports Bras? Do you know why we have that feature, Mateus?
I'm still getting over the chicken wings. But anyway, tell me.
The reason why is research is very clear that at this time of day, there are only three things that people want to hear. They want to hear about UFOs, lesbians, and sports. Therefore, we have lesbians in space who wear sports bras. It's a service.
It's brilliant.
It's a public service. Really? I've never heard it described that way before, but I appreciate the fact that it is brilliant and research-driven. Do you know... Do you know that the movies you review are heavily researched with test audiences who come out of the theaters and hand the cards to people outside the theater? What they don't realize is they're handing the cards to the actual producers of those movies.
Yes, indeed.
Not a research company. The producers actually stand outside those test theaters in the valley and take the cards themselves anxiously and sweatily to see whether or not they have to make any big edits or have any big concerns. There were... two Weinsteins, Harvey and Bob. And I was and am very close friends with Bob. Bob is the good one. He's the good one. He's done nothing wrong in his whole life. He's a wonderful, sweet, kind, generous man. And he was the one who told me that. He said, I'm going to a test in the valley tonight. And they sit with the audience. Freaking Bob Weinstein sat with the audience. And then on the way out, he collected the cards and read them himself. For one of his, actually a big movie.
Oh, I believe it.
And then
they produced some really great movies, too, at that.
And then we went to Mr. Chow's in Beverly Hills, and it was like the waters parting for Moses. Bob Weinstein came in there on a Friday night. It was packed out to the street. He walks in. And magically, in this packed restaurant, a table appeared. Not just any table, Mateus, the best table. And he was seated instantly. Hollywood royalty, not with his brother. And by the way, this might be of interest both to you and Midnight Misfits. The Weinstein brothers, long before the trouble with Harvey, they barely spoke. They worked in two different buildings. They each had staffs, and the job of the staff was to convince each brother that they needed each brother and that they could not separate from the other brother. That was the bulk of the day. They didn't speak. And I asked Bob, I said, have you talked or communicated with your brother since all of this? Never, never, never. And that's the family you don't want, Mateus.
Evidently. Well, I have to say, while you were wearing out your wingtips in Nashville amid the marvelous broadcast colleagues and your fellow geniuses there and great radio people, I was stuck in a movie theater with my jaw open watching something called The Substance with Demi Moore. May I tell you about it?
I want to hear everything about it. I won't interrupt you. Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood, it's your stage. Go.
Thank you, Walter. Well, Demi Moore stars as a once popular television star, Elizabeth Sparkle, sort of an aerobic exercise guru in the vein of Jane Fonda's workout videos of the 80s. But now the network president, Harvey, played by Dennis Quaid in a very disgusting aspect, made more horrifying by these really wide-angle close-ups while he's eating, wants some fresh meat on the air and wishes to send Sparkle out to pasture. And she's distraught. She's in a car accident. She's worried her career is over. And at the hospital, a nurse hands her a number to call for the substance, a black market drug that's going to allow her to be young again, yet get this, for only 7 days at a time, when she must switch back to her original body. Now, she's eager to remain on top. She tries it, and emerging from her spine, this is a horror movie, folks, her old body, right out of it, comes Sue, played by the stunning Margaret Qualley, who's Andy McDowell's daughter, and this is a beautiful woman. So there's this scene where Sue is being born from Elizabeth Sparkle. Both women are completely naked, and they are both still stunning women, in my estimation. So a lot of eye candy there, but it is quite horrific to look at as it's happening. Anyways, young Sue goes for the job that her former host body used to have, and she gets it. And she's enjoying it, but doesn't want to stick on that seven-day rule. And the result is grotesque results for both of them because they have to share it equally, but it doesn't work out that way. I was horrified. The movie wasn't really original, Walter. It reminded me a lot of a movie from the 60s called Seconds with Rock Hudson, where he sort of had a surgery and was able to be young again. And even The Picture of Dorian Gray, which has been made many times, where the portrait goes old, but Dorian doesn't. It's just a new take on this by the director Coralie Farja, who's really got it against men in the industry that have abused women's careers, and you can feel that you're getting a lecture when you see it in this horror movie fashion. Some really great visuals, but I was just, it was not that good to me. Horrific. Brave, of course, though, for the incredible Demi Moore.
It's a lot of crap. I said to my 14 and 17-year-old daughters, when troubles started coming down in Hollywood, I sat them down and said, now you understand that whenever you're in any situation, my daughters, whenever you're in any situation and you find yourself in a hotel room and the person you're with, the man or woman you're with, starts to act in a way that's uncomfortable for you, you leave. Or if they touch you in a way that you don't like, that's called assault. You leave and you call the police and you file charges. You understand that? And my 14 and 16-year-old New York-born daughters look at me as though I'm out of my mind. And they said, yeah, Dad, we know that. How all of these, quote, small C celebrities didn't seem to know that, but the ones that really get me are the reports of women who went back. They had a bad experience, and then they went back to that man's hotel room. They went back to that man's office over and over again. I'm sorry, but you can't say you want to be chairman of the board and you don't have the common sense to leave the room. And that hypocrisy is horrendous to me, because I have, like you, I have worked most of my career. I've worked for women, with women, and hired women. And the women I've hired and worked for and know, they wouldn't do anything like that. They'd like, screw you, buddy, get out. Or they would have kicked them in the pants and then got out. I don't get this. And if you say, well, you know, it's the desire to be on screen and in a play and on a TV is so overwhelming. No, I'm sorry. No. Sorry. There's this thing called free will and faith in your abilities and the police. I just, no. I you cannot say, I want to be in charge. I want to control my career. I want to negotiate my deals. I want to produce the movie. I want to finance the movie. And then say you don't have the common sense to kick him in the balls and get out of the hotel room. Sorry, not buying it. My 14-year-old daughter and my 16-year-old daughter can figure that out. You, Ms. Starlet, can figure it out. That's my speech. And, you know, talk show hosts get to give speeches like that.
Indeed, and a good one, too.
Now, what about that other movie?
There you have.
That, What about the other movie that I like that's a big hit?
Transformers 1 is a big hit this weekend because the kids got it, even though I didn't get it. It is in number two spot because Beetlejuice is still captivating the world by about $1 million more than Transformers 1. The substance we just talked about is down at number six. So Beetlejuice, number one in the country right now at the box office, followed by Transformers 1.
Now, Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood, in Hollywood, when you review in your mind during the past week and obsess about it, about the Emmys, was there anything about the Emmys, one thing that you thought was just really wrong?
Do you want a list?
No. Yeah, I do want a list, but there's father time there, so just one.
I understand. Well, you know, long-form TV shows seem to be doing rather well and are getting some attention from the Emmys, which is, I think, great. I'm not really a TV guy as much as I am a radio and movie guy.
I'm
just looking at it and thinking, you know, there's a lot of stuff we're seeing that just looks like the same thing we've seen before repackaged. Please, a new idea.
Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood, how do we stay in touch with you all week?
Mateus Bumballs Hollywood on Facebook. That's MATIASBOMBAL Hollywood on Facebook. MATIASBOMBAL Hollywood on Facebook. I thank you, Walter.
Thank you. It's impossible to believe it is a live radio show on Sunday night. Sterling every damn night.
Day coming up.
One sad man. We're not talking about P. Diddy. Strippers on the loose. Later, Sterling every damn night.
Hi, I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I tell the story of the woman who would sell her car to potential victims, only to steal it back and then sell it again. Coming up in moments on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Botched heist, pinches well-fed woman, people of Walmart. Later, Sterling Every Damn Night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line, 888-688-WALT.
So you can hit it from all angles. So I'll be like torching them up, and I'll just say, Selena, just turn the pan, you know, without trying to burn her. God forbid I do that. But she'll turn the pan, and I'll torch them up.
All right. Now, this is Selena and Steven of JB Bakery in Burlington, New Jersey, near the shore. This is an old-fashioned bakery, the kind your grandmother used to take you to, where they gave you free cookies and everything smelled amazing. And I thought they had primarily disappeared. I haven't seen one in Center City or in Manhattan for too long. But this is an old-fashioned bakery, the kind you remember. And Stephen, who owns it, is the head baker. And you can find them on Facebook, JB Bakery, JB as in boy, bakery. It's pornography. Looking at the pictures of what they do, once you hit a certain age, this is your pornography. Stephen and Selena, what recipe do you have for us tonight?
So, Walter, I'm up all night baking for my customers and the Midnight Misfits. I really love the fall time, the first day of fall. So I think apple fritters are appropriate for the first, the first day of fall. Apple fritters, which is easy for me to make because it's a donut. And I take, the regular ingredients, flour, sugar, mix everything together, eggs and milk. I have a full recipe that I'm sending to you. And I like to use the Honeycrisp apples because they're sweet and tart. The tip to use is like cut one, in the recipe it says use two apples. Cut one apple, large chunks. Use another apple for small pieces to give more apple throughout the fritter. And also, I like to add in a little bit of applesauce to give it some flavor as well.
There's a trick. Now, listen, Stephen, what's the name of this recipe again? What are we looking for?
Apple fritters.
All right.
So it's
fritters.
A fried apple. It's a fritter because it's like crispy and crunchy.
Steve, buddy, we know what a fritter is, buddy. We're smart.
You got it.
All right, listen, this is Stephen.
Selena loves them.
Stephen and Selena, thanks for shouting in my ear. Stephen and Selena of JB Bakery in Burlington, New Jersey. They're the best. Sterling every damn night.
OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Yes, and we're on WWTK in Sebring, 7:30 a.m. Michael Ewing's powerful radio station. I'm grateful to be on there, and I'm grateful for Dr. Dave's weather. I was looking at this nonsense about President Trump's security detail with Secret Service. And I thought, you know, there were so many mistakes here, it's really hard to believe. And no, I'm not talking about politics. I'm talking about life. And I'm talking about a man who's a husband, a father, a grandfather, and he's supposed to have the best protection in the world. And don't give me any nonsense about how he's not a current president. He is the most controversial human being on the planet, and therefore always at risk. And I thought, you know, if only I could talk to a police officer. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, a star of this show is retired Detective Vic Ferrari of a real police department, the New York City Police Department. And it's an honor to have Vic Ferrari on my show every week with his special report and his great excerpts from his spectacular books, which you must buy. And I thought, well, Vic, maybe you could come on live tonight from Florida and share with us your thoughts about the security detail for Donald Trump. Oh, my God.
Walter, you're too kind. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
You're the best.
Well, it doesn't look good. Starting with Butler, I had, as a member of the New York City Police Department, I had dignitary protection training. I went out with the Secret Service, not on a presidential detail, but with other foreign heads of state. And basically, Trump probably has 5 to 10 people that were with him during his term at the White House, that are with him at Mar-a-Lago when they go everywhere he goes. But when he has a rally or he's going somewhere, there's an advance team. So a couple of people from his team will go to that city. They meet with the local Secret Service field office, and they're supposed to map everything out and check everything and make sure. And just, I mean, just starting with Butler, there was just so many mistakes. It's unbelievable.
Now, you have friends in enforcement at different levels. What does your community say about this? Because when I heard that in Butler, Pennsylvania, not exactly a hotbed of crime, when I heard that in Butler, Pennsylvania, they were, quote, heavily relying on local police, I'm like, with respect, I wouldn't rely on Butler, that type of town, for help with the police other than speeding tickets.
Yeah, usually what they'll do, like I can speak to, like when the president comes to New York City, for instance, they depend on law enforcement to get the president to and from the airport, usually to the Waldorf Astoria or the UN. They close down streets. But the hands-on stuff is generally handled by the United States Secret Service.
Right. You wouldn't. And then the nonsense about they were texting each other on their cell phones rather than having a direct walkie-talkie link, rather than having a direct radio or secure radio link. They were texting. When I tried to text my kids, sometimes that can show up 6 hours later. What were they thinking? How would they conclude that texting another department would be sufficient?
I can't see any way how that is acceptable. This certainly didn't have the A-team on the ground. If anything, they needed Mr. T. It just seems like, and from what I've read, a lot of those people that we saw running around during that fire drill after the president was shot were people from Homeland Security. And it was fairly obvious by the shape that some of these people were in. They were not in shape. They were more concerned with their sunglasses. There was a few of them that couldn't reholster their weapons. It looked to me like a clown show.
Well, that was the other thing. when I think of a Secret Service officer, I think of perfect suit and trim, in shape, ready to deal with anything. And you're right. It looked like most of the people who tried to surround Trump and Butler had just put down their slice. And it was not a good look, not to mention the fact that it is endlessly minimized. A man was murdered in front of his children and his wife.
I know.
A fireman was murdered in front of his children and his wife and two other people who had gone to witness a celebration of democracy event were seriously injured. And so when they say an attempted assassination, no, sorry, it was a successful assassination. A retired fireman was murdered in front of his children. And then when you watch I'm sure you watched some of the Senate committee questioning the Secret Service. What was your impression from that?
He tried to take some responsibility, then he tried pawning it off on local law enforcement. Like you said, Butler Police Department or whatever police department out there, it's not like a large police department with a lot of resources and training and people that have been involved in some serious situations. So he the new guy, I think, is going to be part of the problem, too. He looked like he was doing a lot of tap dancing and deflecting.
He was not impressive at all. And I figured he'd be a real Secret Service guy. But then I start hearing about him, and he's just part of the problem. He's just, and as many have pointed out, nobody's been fired. How is it possible the person responsible for that setup in Butler, and then how he was fired? And if there hadn't been a citizen on mark in Florida this week at the golf course, that person may well have gotten off a shot. That shooter was not stopped by Secret Service. That shooter was stopped by a woman passing by, following the car and taking a picture of the license plate. What the hell is this?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like they're taking President Trump's security detail seriously. Now, if you remember, after the first assassination attempt, when he spoke at the RNC, when he walked up on stage, because they knew all eyes were with him, there was like 30 Secret Service agents, and that was top of the line men and women that marched up with him, and he was, you know, behind the bulletproof glass and everything. But then, like everything else, as soon as that, all the lights were off, and, you know, he's golfing at an event, and they kind of left him wide open again.
And he's in a tough spot, because notice after every one of these events, he always must say, I thank the Secret Service, I respect them, they did a great job. Because he's married to them. He has to say that.
Right.
He can't express any doubt, or else they'll blink. But the thing about it is that with the guy on the golf course, this looks really suspicious. Because here's this sketchy guy who went to Ukraine to volunteer, and they didn't want him. Okay, he went to volunteer, and they didn't want him. Are you kidding me? They'll take dogs, and they didn't want this guy. And then he comes back, he travels around the country, and somehow or another, he knows where the unannounced golf game was going to be that Sunday. And the fact that the security is so lax, I can't think that there's a preemptive design plan to murder the president. But I can imagine that maybe we're just purposely not putting our best people on him.
Well, this latest assassination attempt, this guy, it almost screams of Lee Harvey Oswald. I mean, Lee Harvey Oswald defected to Russia, came back. The Russians didn't want him during the Cold War.
Right.
They sent him back, and it's the same thing. He's everywhere making ridiculous posts. Lee Harvey Oswald was in New Orleans handing out pamphlets. I mean, just making a jackass out of himself. Same as this guy. You wouldn't take this guy seriously. You'd say, okay, this guy's a nut. I'm going to cross the street. And where did he get the money? He's living in Hawaii. He travels across the United States. He's got a gun with he's got an AR-15 with the serial number filed off. I mean, where's the money coming from for this?
Where do you think it's coming from? Vic Ferrari, retired New York City police detective. You're a detective. Where do you think the money's coming from?
This somebody funneling him money for him to go to the Ukraine. And why isn't he getting stopped? Why isn't he getting stopped and questioned when he comes back into the United States? I mean, I get on a plane, I got to go through TSA, and they're going through my stuff and asking me questions. This guy just seems to be traveling all over the place, and he's making a lot of noise while he's doing it.
It takes, sometimes it'll take me an hour to get into freaking Canada. I'm like, this. You're right, this guy's going in and out wherever he wants. It's not cheap to go to Ukraine, and it's not easy to get in. He had to get in addition to trouble getting back out. Think about that. You and I try to go to a war zone country under watched carefully by the Soviet Union. You and I couldn't just go to Ukraine.
No, I think he's got contacts overseas. Absolutely.
All right. Well, you're a detective. Here's your job. Find out about all this stuff. Come on in 2 weeks and give us a full report, Vic Ferrari. Vic Ferrari, tell me the name of your latest book, because we're going to run your feature coming up in just seconds. What's the name of your latest book?
NYPD Laughing in the Line of Duty.
NYPD Laughing in the Line of Duty, Vic Ferrari on Amazon. It's a beautiful story you got there, buddy. You really have done a nice job for yourself.
Thank you, Walter. I appreciate it.
That's our friend Vic Ferrari. It is such an honor for me to have a retired New York City police detective of note on Sterling every damn night. This is a live radio show coast to coast. I'm Walter M. Sterling. Sterling every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
One sad man. We're not talking about P. Diddy. Strippers on the loose. Later, Sterling every damn night.
Hi, I'm retired New York City police detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I tell the story of the woman who would sell her car to potential victims, only to steal it back and then sell it again. Coming up in moments on Sterling every damn night.
Botched heist, pinches well-fed woman, people of Walmart. Later, Sterling every damn night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line, 888-688-WALT.
Every damn night, inspired by that demure trend.
The demure trend is probably my favorite trend to ever come to TikTok, because we're finally calling people out and we're bringing a little bit of shame back, because honestly, the world kind of needs it. Finally. I don't think we need to be this nice about it, but I'll take it.
Walter, on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I'd like to tell a story from my days as a detective working in the NYPD's Auto Crime Division. So you see a lot of scams in the Auto Crime Division, but one of the most ingenious ones I saw was a woman who used her car as bait in a fishing game. So what she would do is, she had a Toyota Camry, she would post it for sale on Craigslist, and when potential buyers would come to check out her car, she would ask them just as many questions as they were asking about oil changes and the mileage. She'd find out where they lived and their name and everything. They'd negotiate a price. She'd sign the title over to them, give them a set of keys, and they'd be on their way with the car. Well, what she would do is, she would go to DMV and get a duplicate title, and she always kept a second set of keys. Then what she would do is, she would wait a couple of weeks. She knew where the person lived. She'd go back with her keys, and she drives back to her house. Now, the person's going to come out and see their car is stolen. What do? They go to the police to report it stolen. She would wait until they reported stolen. then she would go to an NYPD precinct with the title. And she would say, yeah, I had a problem with this person, but it's my car. I have the title. And a lot of times, these cops, they didn't call the auto crime division to look into it. What happens? They wound up canceling the alarm for her. Well, her undoing was she had done this 4 or 5 times. She would put it back for sale on Craigslist. So what winds up happening is one of her victims sees the car that they just purchased now for sale on Craigslist with the same photos, the same phone number, the same neighborhood. They contact the auto crime division. Myself and another detective go to the house, and parked outside is this car. So we knock on the door. She comes to the door and she was, what do you want? And we said, do you have the paperwork for the car? She said, yeah. So we come out and she says, this is my car. She was not reported stolen, which raises a red flag because we didn't say anything about it being stolen. I said, I know what you did. You canceled the alarm. And she goes, detective, I'm a woman of means. I go, well, what does that mean? She goes, I got bills to pay. And I said, yeah. She says, and I use my car as a way of getting my bills paid. I says, well, hon, today you're going to jail. So we lock her up for selling her own car to people, and then they're reporting it stolen, and she's getting it back and canceling the alarm on it. So that night when we went to talk to the district attorney, the DA was like, wait a minute. You're locking her up for selling her own car? I said, yeah, under false pretenses. Then she's going and stealing it. So what wound up happening is she was charged for about 5 counts of grand larceny auto for her own car, which in typical Bronx fashion, I think she probably only got slapped on the wrist with probation. So for more interesting NYPD stories, be sure to check out my new book, Grand Theft Auto, the NYPD's Auto Crime Division.
888-688-WALT. Evan in Kansas City, welcome to Sterling Every Damn Night.
Hello.
Evan, welcome to the big show.
Hey, I wanted to tell you about the best damn hoagies in the world.
Where?
Camden, New Jersey, at the corner of Ferry Avenue and Federal Street.
Frank's and what? Deli. What is your favorite hoagie?
The roast beef. Everything roast on beef. It except for vinegar.
What else do you put on it?
Everything on it except for vinegar.
Yeah, I don't get the vinegar thing either. That's always confused me. I believe in mayonnaise and mustard and, depending on the meat, ketchup. Now, are you in Kansas City?
Camden, New Jersey.
You're in Camden, New Jersey. I love my life.
Yes, sir.
Listen, I believe there should be a wall put up between Philadelphia and Camden, New Jersey, to protect both sides. How do you feel about that?
I agree.
Now, listen, the other thing, Evan, can you believe the DARPA tolls that they took it up from $5 to $6 for what? What are we getting more going across the Delaware River than we did yesterday? What the hell is that?
It's crazy. They could build, the amount of money they take, they could build a new Ben Frank.
Yes.
Every 2 years.
Yes. It's criminal what they bring in. And during the week on WPHT, I'm gonna dig into their numbers to see just how crazy it is. Evan, I am grateful that you listen. Thank you very much to listening to Sterling Every Damn Night. It's exciting to be with you, isn't it? Don't you feel it? Look at this beautiful autumn weekend we've had. I'm going to talk about the things that people aren't allowed to talk about in autumn. There are secrets of the autumnal events that you and I just are never allowed to express, or we're not even Americans. That's coming up in just seconds. Walter M. Sterling, Sterling Every Damn Night.
Jeff from Oshkosh set out to find his fame and fortune, went to Southern California, and decided he was going to be the richest lube salesman in the entire world. Enter one P. Diddy. P. Diddy apparently was having something called freak-offs. include a lot of very famous people and a lot of strippers and prostitutes. These freak-offs, by the way, featured liquid cocaine. I didn't realize you could get cocaine that's liquid. I thought you had to snort it. Huh, good to know. A fun fact. Well, Jeff from Oshkosh made millions off of lube sales. He was essentially Mr. Lubricant for all of California. Purchased an amazing mansion in Malibu, overlooking the Pacific Ocean. Amazing views of the beaches. And that lube money was never going to end. When someone is hiring a lot of strippers and prostitutes, generally speaking, they very well may be in the human trafficking game. P. Diddy's been accused of that. Doesn't seem like he's that good of a guy. I thought P. Diddy was a great guy, but no, not a good guy at all. Apparently, allegedly. Jeff, the lube salesman, now having to reassess his future and perhaps the whole lubricant industry. From a giant lubricant warehouse which features champagne, this is Vila Hool. Strippers on the loose, Sterling every damn night.
Oh, look at that. It's 40 minutes past the hour. You and I on 7165 going up and down the great southeast. I have to tell you about something. If you live in the southeast, why aren't we on WSB yet? We were on WSB for years, and then Ken Charles came after Pete Spriggs blew us off because it was his final act before retirement. Good going, Pete. Is that your revenge for the fact that you couldn't beat real radio after I whooped your butt at WDBO? Is that what that's about? Whooped his butt. Real Radio 104.1 in Orlando, Florida. One of my crowning achievements. Because we put on shows that were totally oriented toward the 28-year-old who lives in Orlando, Florida. You have to understand, Orlando is the most psycho city in America to this day. It has the most strip clubs per capita of any city and the most evangelical Christian colleges of any city in America. And it has a river that runs away from the ocean. Right. It runs away from the ocean. It is a psycho town. But it's built on the amusement parks, on all the amusement parks that are there, right? And that means hundreds, thousands of minimum wage workers live there. And unlike every other city in America, there are rental units for rent, rental apartments for rent, and their ads are on the radio all the time. Now, I don't know about you, but any place I've lived, there have been no ads for renting apartments because in real cities, it's always a fight just to get an apartment. It's a fight to get an apartment in Boston, Philadelphia, Washington, New York. It's hard to get an apartment, and they're certainly not going to advertise. But in Orlando, oh, move in this weekend. We'll pay for the move. You'll get a free washer dryer, free parking, new tires, and a sofa. Congratulations. First 3 months free. It's unbelievable. And it's not because they have an abundance of apartments, but it's because they have an abundance of turnover. These minimum wage jobs tend to be short term, or a person gets there, they think, oh my God, I finally got away from Springfield, Massachusetts. I'm going to go live in this beautiful place in Orlando, Florida, where it's 80 degrees all year. I'm getting away from Maine, escaping Maine. I'm escaping WGAN, and I get to live in Orlando, where it's always beautiful and sunny, and I have this job. And guess what? It's a minimum wage job. And your phone bill's still coming, and your electric bill's still coming, your car payment, your insurance. Oh, my gosh. They realize they can't afford to live there. Then they're not going to get a raise. There's nobody's going to get a raise in Orlando. That's why it's an amazing event in Orlando that these ads are running for apartments. And I designed a radio station in Orlando, Florida, and I try not to talk about my past life, but I designed a radio station in Orlando, Florida that was made for people working in the amusement parks, minimum wage people, great people, working 24 hours a day, right? And what was their life? They went to work, and they went to a bar, and then they went to a club, heard a concert. That was it. They had a buddy who could get them into the concert for free. That was the deal. And I designed a talk radio station specifically for 28-year-olds. That's what I wanted. 28-year-olds, and son of a gun. From day one, when we started taking phone calls, we said, can we ask how old you are? 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 28, 29, 30. Well, what did we talk about? We talked about life in the strip clubs, life of strippers. We had on strippers, and we had on women who were very happy to discuss anal sex. No problem. And we were number one in men in the first rating book. Just boom, like a 18 share of men 18 to 34 with what? What? Yes, with talk. It is possible to reach any demographic you want on the radio with talk, just like it is with music. And if I can do it, it's not hard. The only trick is you got to grit your teeth and hold the chair and wait. Because if anybody starts talking about politics, if anybody starts talking about the town council, boom, you're done. Won't happen. Nothing will happen. We get zero. But I want to share with you coming up in just seconds what you and I are never allowed to say about autumn and the fall. And I'm not talking about pumpkin spice. Everybody makes fun of pumpkin spice. That's out in the open now. You can make fun of pumpkin spice. Not in front of your wife, but you can make fun of pumpkin spice. I'm going to talk about something far more devious and important in just seconds. It's a live radio show on Sunday night on 81-17, The Luge, I-4 in Florida, 5 in California, KFBK. Welcome to Sterling Every Damn Night. You and I can talk live anytime you want at 888-688-WALT, 888-688-9258. I drove from Nashville to Cleveland to Philadelphia this weekend. On Friday, I went down to Nashville for the National Radio Hall of Fame induction ceremony. And this was one of the years where I went and looked at everybody who was inducted. I went, perfect. Everybody deserved to be. I think there's six people. Everybody deserved to be. It was a well-balanced group, including Mary McCrory. Mary McCrory of a little radio station in Texas that I just was remembering, and I immediately forgot because I didn't have enough dinner. Low blood sugar. And Mary has been on the radio for 78 freaking years. She does 10 to noon on this radio station in Conroe, Texas. And she's been on for 78 years. And she went into a radio station when she was 3. And she made them record her singing. And when she was 12, she went back and made them explain to her everything about the station and how everything worked. And said, you have to give me a show. And they did. And she'd been on the radio in Conroe, Texas ever since. And yes, you bet she deserves to be in the National Radio Hall of Fame. And my friend Lee Harris, the legendary Lee Harris, morning drive anchor on 1010 Winds in New York. And now the, I don't know what that title is. It confuses me. But he's in charge of News Nation, the cable channel, the only cable news channel that covers UFOs. And we get to have Ross on from News Nation every Tuesday and Thursday on my WPHT in Philadelphia show. And News Nation, I love News Nation. That one makes sense. It actually sniffs at being fair and balanced. And he's also the program director, de facto program director of WGN in Chicago. And he's a great man. He was on 1010 Winds for 28 years in Morning Drive. He was the voice to New York City on 9/11. The voice to New York City on 9/11. He was the one who told firemen in New York City that they had to stop whatever they were doing and go to their firehouse. Can you imagine making that announcement to every fireman in New York City, real firemen? having to say, you have to go to your firehouse, drop what you're doing right now, and go. Oh, my gosh. Can't even begin to imagine. And he got inducted. And he was gracious, and he gave me a shout-out from the podium. He's one of the people I'd like to work for. That's because you never worked for me. I did that, and then I discovered something that I am so grateful does not exist near where I live. But you might know about it. I'd heard about it peripherally. I heard people mention it, but I didn't know about it. You've been to a Buc-ee's, Keith Mortensen, you've been to a Buc-ee's. Every truck driver who listens to Sterling every damn night has been to a Buc-ee's. But I hadn't been, and I had not seen one. Now, if you live in the Northeast, the Midwest, the West Coast, you haven't been to a Buc-ee's unless you visit your relatives in the Southeast. But if you... I can't begin to do it justice. I want you to take the best rest stop with treats, snacks, the best one you've ever been to, and imagine it 100 times bigger. 72,000 square feet. This is a rest stop on the side of the highway. 72,000 square feet. Started in Texas, went out from there throughout the Southeast. Very big in Tennessee, Kentucky, Florida, I'm sure, Georgia, Texas. Buc-ee's. B-U-C-E-E-S, I think. Buc-ee's. Here's the first thing you notice when you pull into a Buc-ee's. I'm not kidding you. 100 gas pumps. 100 gas pumps. 100 gas pumps. And sure enough, it was the cheapest gas I saw from Nashville to Philadelphia. $2.50. 100 gas pumps. Just imagine that. You don't have to worry about pulling in on the right side or the wrong side. There's plenty of gas pumps for you. Not an issue. Then, inside, every treat, every type of snack food, every junk food that you ever have wanted, it's not just there. They're making it there. They're making it. There's a taco factory, a big island in the middle of the store, taco factory. And you love cookie dough. You love to eat cookie dough, raw cookie dough, right? There's a floor-to-ceiling refrigerator that just has cookie dough and fudge. Whatever flavor of fudge you want, they make it there. They cut it to your exact size that you request. They bag it perfectly. They seal it perfectly. You got kids in the car, every type of stuffed animal, every little stupid toy, ice cream, coffee, alcohol, coffee. I can't do it justice. And you want cigarettes? Hey, it's the South. No problem. All the cigarettes you want. Every brand, every type of every brand, everything. 70,000 square feet. It's called Buc-ee's. Changed my life. Just knowing that it exists. Oh, and of course, there are grown humans inside Buc-ee Bear costumes. And I posted on Facebook, Walter Sterling, S-T-E-R, Walter Sterling. I posted a picture of myself with the Buc-ee Bear. I said, can I have my picture with you? Well, that's what he was there for. He was there to have my picture taken with him. That was the purpose of the Buc-ee Bear, to allow people, like tourists like me, to get their picture with an animated bear. I can't do it justice. All I can say is that, oh, and the thing Mom cares about, the thing you care about, it's immaculate. The bathrooms are immaculate. There's not that scary thing that happens in service station restrooms. They're happy to have you go to the bathroom. There are bathrooms everywhere. You could live in those bathrooms. The floors don't stick. Nothing in this place has one speck of dirt. It is immaculate. I salute. I congratulate the people who run Buc-ee's. Oh, my God. And then there always seem to be very close to a Waffle House. Now, why is it that only the Southeast has superior gourmet treat offerings? A Waffle House next to every Buc-ee's, a Waffle House every mile in the Southeast. Where I live, I got to go to Pennsylvania to get one. There's not any near me. But I got more to talk to you about the autumn coming up in just seconds. This is Sterling every damn night.
You're repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Goblin.
Coming up in just seconds, Dave Scott will have everything we need to know about UFOs. Plus, I will tell you one of the secrets of fall, something we are not allowed to say in public. Now, Dr. Dave, weather.
Fall news, more news. Day and night around the clock, it's your news. You get it all when you set your dial to Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night.
You know, Dave, I don't need to run the jingle that long, but I realized tonight, because we had to fill network holes, that jingle is really long. Like, the whole jingle is like a minute long. I will have to send it to you, and then you can play it for your friends.
I would love that. And I didn't think it was too long. I was just, stroking my ego a little bit, and it's a good night, man. It's a good night.
Well, don't you feel you deserve to stroke your ego?
Well, not right now, because I am way too ill to actually be doing anything, but I could not I had to turn the taps off on my cold in order to do this job with you tonight, and I'm more than happy to be here.
All right, well, listen to this. I'll make it easier on you. You won't have to do a lot of talking. Just listen to this.
Are there aliens at Area 51?
I think that might be a question that I get more than any question. And I will say this. I don't think I'm a believer, but I've interviewed pilots that look, I like Tom Cruise, but better than Tom Cruise. And the blonde crew cuts, the Hulk, and this, yes, sir. And they were in the Oval Office, three or four pilots. These are not people that make up stories. These are some. They said, all I know, sir, is there was a round object that was going four times faster than my F-22, which is a very fast plane. And it wasn't, you know, it shouldn't have been. It was round, sir. They have seen, I mean, four or five guys I've interviewed, solid people, great pilots for the U.S. Air Force, etc. They've seen things that they cannot explain.
Donald Trump confirming what you have been saying, Dave Scott.
I want to make a big comment on this. Okay, let's turn the tides on this a little bit. If UFOs do not exist, Walter, why is the President of the United States interviewing fighter pilots about UFOs?
This is a sort of This is a sort of transformative question that you, Dave Scott, would come up with. Brilliant. It never would occur to me, how come were they in his office to begin with?
Exactly. You know, we talked about that clip on Spaced Out Radio last week, and to me, it's defining. And you notice how President Trump said, I don't know if I really believe in this, because he has to say that as a former president and potentially next president. He has to say that. There are rules and guidelines inside the White House of what the president can and cannot say. The UFO topic, whether people want to believe in it or not, Walter, is one of the topics that presidents are not allowed to talk about. We've heard them mention it. And look, when they go on these talk shows, Walt, You know this, but maybe your audience doesn't. Every president or former president that goes on a late-night talk show or a daytime talk show, the questions are preloaded. They already know those questions are coming. That way, the host does not surprise the president or former president with any questions that they are not prepared for, therefore not embarrassing the current or former world leader. Therefore, Trump knew that question was coming. And every president, whether they've been on Arsenio Hall back in the day like Bill Clinton, or on Jimmy Kimmel like Barack Obama, where they were asked the UFO question, they all have to deny it. But it's an irony that he would say he doesn't believe it, but he believes his good-looking, better-looking than Tom Cruise fighter pilots, that they saw something.
Dave Scott,
going
ufologist.
Four times as fast as F-22.
Dave Scott, ufologist from Canada. Were you also suspicious of the fact that he brought up how attractive those men were and that they had blonde hair and they looked better than Tom Cruise? Were you a little suspicious of the president's orientation at that moment?
Nah, he likes to surround himself with good-looking people. He thinks he's good-looking, you know, but that doesn't bother me. Now, if he was Diddy, I would be worried about it. But now, with President Trump, I'm not worried about it.
Now, the Diddy thing, has it hit in waves in the Canadian pop culture scene? Are people in Canada discussing it?
Absolutely. Absolutely, they are. The reason why is because Justin Bieber is a Canadian from just outside of Toronto, and he was found by Usher, who was allegedly groomed by Diddy. And there is Candace Owens actually has a really good video on this right now, where they are talking about, or she is talking about the fact that Justin Bieber may be a victim in this, where he was groomed as a teenager and taken advantage of in exchange for fame and fortune. And it's like selling your soul to the devil. And if he ends up suiciding himself with the cameras off in that same prison that Jeffrey Epstein was in, I'll tell you, it's going to be a very interesting affair to see how the American public reacts to this, because there is something ugly out there.
Well, I promise you, the cameras on Diddy's cell are already not working. Promise you. The other thing is about Justin Bieber. When he first moved to Los Angeles and lived with, which one did he live with, Usher or Diddy?
He lived with Usher.
He lived with Usher, and he was 15. When I heard that he had moved to Los Angeles to live with Usher, as a parent, I'm like, what? And this is where I differ with mainstream sociologists who say, well, then, you know, it was a terrible thing that Usher may have done, and if we find out Usher did do something terrible, that would be horrible. No. I am very clear about this. I'm a parent, and I am responsible for the health and welfare of my 15-year-old, not a neighbor, not somebody in another city. I'm responsible. And if anything happened to that kid, his parents are responsible. No one else. That's who by law is responsible. And then you throw in the fact he went across country lines. Whoa. No, his parents were responsible. However, what's left out of this story, now he's happily married. The PR people today said about Justin Bieber, they said, right now, when they asked about the sex parties, they're saying, right now he is focused on being a good husband and a good father. That was their quote. Okay, that's cute. But 2 years ago, 3 years ago, he was out of his mind. He had taken over a big rental house. He was blowing his money like crazy. He was on drugs. He was drunk. He was up all night. He was out of his mind. And, maybe something did happen. I hope not.
I hope not either. But, I mean, the other thing, too, is on that story, because I do have another potential UFO story for you.
Yes, sir.
The other portion about that is Usher, Pink, and many others scrubbing their ex accounts today. And then Usher, after he scrubbed his ex account, coming on this evening and saying my account was hacked. You guys sure ran with this? Come on. Stop lying. Okay, we know. We're not dumb. We know.
UFO stuff. What do you got there, Scott?
Well, a very interesting thing happening in the United States right now, Walt. And how this is not bigger news, I don't know. There is going to be an alleged top secret meeting coming up here within the next day or two regarding the James Webb satellite. Now, the rumor speaking on this right now is that about 10 light years away, the James Webb satellite allegedly may have picked up life somewhere else. Now, this is the first time that a satellite image will cause, that we know of, a top secret meeting because of what it saw in space. Now, there are rumors that obviously it could be that it found life, that it maybe found a meteor or an asteroid 10 light years away that is heading for us. But an asteroid 10 light years away is not going to be cause for concern for a top secret meeting. Now, there is allegedly, as there always is, and I always tell people, caution yourself on this, okay, there is allegedly a whistleblower who says it found life, but of course we don't know the name of that person, we don't know what department they worked in, we're just going to have to monitor this story. But it is very interesting that the James Webb telescope may have caught something, and now there's going to be a top secret meeting in Washington, D.C.
When's the meeting, do you know?
I'm hearing within the next week.
And who would reveal the contents of that meeting to the rest of the world? Would anybody, or is there somebody who's in charge of making these announcements? What do you think?
There is one of the, and I apologize, Walt, because I'm ill. I forget his name right now.
It's okay.
But there is somebody who has come out who I believe is a Republican congressman or senator who has said that we are having a top secret meeting regarding the James Webb telescope.
All right, Dave Scott, I'm sorry you don't feel good. Now, the good news is you and I are not on tomorrow night. We're preempted by a worthless football game tomorrow night. We get a break tomorrow night. I hope you use that time to feel better. I hope you give yourself a night off from your other show. And how do I get in touch with you during the week?
We're always at spacedoutradio.com. And please, to the misfits, head on over to YouTube and sign up for our free YouTube channel, Spaced Out Radio.
Spaced Out Radio. Good evening. This is a live radio show, coast to coast, on big radio station, KMOX, WPHT, when they're not wasting time with sports. Oh, my God. WGAN, welcome. This is Sterling every damn night.
Walmart on Sterling at night.
There has been a rash of thefts of wonderful meat products in the Philadelphia area. Latest, $42,000 worth of crab stolen from a truck, according to the cops. Larry Krasner can't wait for these fellers to be arrested so he can let them out of jail. So three pallets of seafood. So here's what's going on here. There's somebody driving around, you know, with some sort of a truck type thing. It looks kind of professional. They have a forklift, refrigerated truck. Forklift comes out. They get the pallets of meat real quick. Lickety split, on their way. Now, what do they do with this large amount of meat? My belief is that there's a food distributor, maybe a store, maybe on Facebook Marketplace, that are able to distribute this meat to make a lot of money. The way that this is organized almost leads you to believe La Cosa Nostra is involved, selling this to restaurants, or perhaps restaurants that are run indirectly by members of the mob. You can help the police out by reporting any specials on crab meat. If you walk into a wonderful Italian restaurant, no stereotypes, please, and they have a crab bonanza going on. Great values on crab meat and crab ravioli, crab, everything. Crab Florentine.
have chicken quarantine, crab quarantine. Man, that sounds delicious, doesn't it? Enjoy your meal, then report it to the cops. I don't know if the crab has individual serial numbers. Probably kind of tough to trace. But, you know, here we are. For the people of Walmart, this is Velo Hool. 1210 WPHT, Sterling, every damn night.
With another edition of Drive Through Brew, I'm J.J. Wilson. What do Jake and the manager talk about when they're not loading beer and snacks into people's trunks? Well, women, of course. Let's listen.
Jake, you look a little down today. Everything okay?
Not really. I went to the bar last night and talked to three different girls, and all of them turned me down for a date.
Oh, that's terrible.
The first girl said she was getting paid to test a new shampoo, and she had to wash her hair every night for the next 2 years.
Baloney, what about the second girl?
She said her Siamese cat was sick and she had to take it back to Siam.
How stupid.
And the third girl said she wouldn't date me because I had a room temperature IQ.
To heck with her.
So I said, my house ain't air conditioned and the rooms get real hot in the summer. Would you date me if my IQ made it over 90?
This isn't looking good. I wonder what kind of pickup lines Jake is using. Listen next time when he says,
"Hey, darling, you look real familiar. Didn't I see you get hit in the face on the Jerry Springer show?"
That's next time on Drive Thru Brew. Word Car speaking.
Good evening, Walter M. Sterling. This is Sterling on Sunday. A live radio show coast to coast from Maine to California. Can you believe that? I can't believe so many decision makers at radio companies blinked. Yeah, sure, put it on Sunday night. What does it matter? They had no idea. They figured it would be another one of these dreary golden you. How does William Devane know about gold? Why would William Devane know about my retirement and gold needs? A B-level Lifetime Network actor on the Christmas specials, playing a lawyer or a bad husband. A Lifetime movie. Was there a bad man involved? That's how you know. But how would William Devane know about my need for gold and where to get it and why his company was... How would he know? And how am I supposed to tell the difference between gold companies because they're all selling gold? It's supposed to be exactly the same thing. We have the Drive-Thru Brew special. Do you know what a drive-thru is? Drive-Thru Brew is a beer barn. If you don't know it, I'll tell you, you won't believe it. You drive up to something, it's usually a shit or a house, and you pull into what should be the garage, but it's not. Both sides are open. And there you are, floor-to-ceiling refrigerator units. And a guy or a woman says, "What do you want?" "I want 2 cases of Diet Coke." Pop your trunk, they put it in, you don't have to get out, you pay them. It's unbelievable. It's one of the greatest parts of being an American. I'm Walter M. Sterling. This is Sterling on Sunday.
I don't even think he's gay. You really shouldn't assume someone's sexual orientation, but he absolutely was.
Well, if he's gay with an ass like that, he's got worse problems than my assumption.
Deborah!
It's 37 past the hour. Good evening. I'm Walter M. Sterling, and this is Sterling on Sunday. Now, if you think I should be on every day, WPHT in Philadelphia said, you know, this should be on every night. And they did that in August. And thank you. We got, shockingly big ratings. I have no idea how or why. There's no accounting for taste. There's no explanation. But the station you're listening to now, if you sent them an email, say, why can't we have this every night? This is the sort of trouble I want you to cause, right? Neil Paul, Judy Paul, good evening, Charlie Green, my buddy Keith Mortensen, who's moving into a beautiful house in Florida after driving a UPS 18-wheeler for years across the country, started to listen to me 10 years ago and has been loyal ever since. You used to be on a motorcycle, Keith. What happened to that? Do you still ride the motorcycle? Have you given that up? And Billy Datz, Karen O'Neill. Hey, Karen, how come I don't hear from you? I'm worried about you. I'm going to now have to make sure you're still healthy and well. I hope so. If you'd like to be a Midnight Misfit, congratulations. Finally, you and I have a club. This is our club for introverts, misfits, troublemakers at work, the ones who sit in the corner at a party thinking. You and I spend our day thinking, coming up with ideas that are better than the day people's ideas. There's nothing worse than the person at work who says, I like team players. Shut up. I'm here. I'm on your team. I don't need to go, rah, rah, yeah, you're great, boss. It's true. No. And don't give me that crap about, well, you know, you need to get here early. No, I need to get there on time. Only salespeople think you should get there at 5 a.m. for what? To look around, make coffee, rifle through other people's stuff, go to the HR file, see what other people are earning. That's the only thing that happens to people who get to work at 5 a.m., unless they happen to be the morning person. But let me tell you, this time of year, you and I are forced into something that we're not allowed to complain about. You and I are forced into the phenomena of pumpkin picking. The pumpkin patch is the enemy of every city dweller, suburban dweller. You live in the suburbs. You live in the city. We are not made to go to the pumpkin patch. My current wife, or as she likes to call herself arrogantly, your only wife, as she likes to say, we get the pumpkin close to Halloween or else it goes bad. We are always the last one to get pumpkins because she has this mythology in her head that the pumpkin will go bad immediately upon our purchase. Now, newsflash, the pumpkin only starts to go bad once you cut it open. They're all sitting in the pumpkin patch at Walmart, at supermarkets. They're all over, right? Starting now. They showed up this weekend, which is why I mention it. As a result, 10 days before Halloween, when it's freezing, that's when the Sterlings go to the pumpkin patch. And it's a horrible experience. You get on some horrible truck, flatbed truck, sit there uncomfortable. I feel as though I'm about to fall off. I always wear the wrong shoes. I never wear enough clothes, or I wear too much. It's either 80 by the time we get there or 20, right? We get on this flatbed truck, and we go down this path. You see these, some places have these cutouts of Halloween things that wave at you. I don't want anything to do with it. Then, 10 days before Halloween, there I am in the pumpkin patch. The good pumpkin patches do not pluck the pumpkin. The bad ones do. Therefore, they've been sitting there a while. But 10 days before Halloween, there aren't any pumpkins. They're mostly gone, except, oh, wait, we'll take you way over there. And now I'm in a far corner of the pumpkin patch. And what do I have to do? I have to pick up 10 and 15-pound, 20-pound pumpkins and then get them on the flatbed truck. Is there someone to help me? No. There's one person. That's the driver of the flatbed truck, and he or she is not moving. They're like union. No, I just drive. I don't help. Fine. Two, three, four of us in our family will pick up the pumpkins, have to get it onto the flatbed truck, and then we have to go back in the 20 degrees, the bumpy dirt road, half a mile to the barn. What happens at the barn? You won't believe this. Ladies and gentlemen, I say it, and I still can't believe it. The farmer and the farmer's daughter, who's always hot, college age, always hot, and she weighs the pumpkins and then tells me how much I have to pay for the privilege of having been on a uncomfortable flatbed truck, on the back of a flatbed truck in the middle of an open field in 20 degrees. I have to, I then have to pay for having done farm work. I have to pay for being a laborer on the farm. That's what I have to do. Oh, and there are the sugar pumpkin donuts that were just made and still hot. Perfect for my diabetes, and we might as well get a gallon of cider. That wasn't from that farm. That was from some wholesaler who white labels it for the farm, right? And then I get back in the car with these pumpkins that are not the ones I want. They're misshapen. They're mutant pumpkins. They've been near plutonium. These are ones in the plutonium part. Misshapen, a little rotten, pushed in, green on one side, flat on the other. It's a horrible experience. But what is the problem with this, my friend? What is the problem with this, my misfit? We're not allowed to complain. We're supposed to view this as a wonderful ritual. We're supposed to view it as something that we love. Something that we can't wait to take the 12-year-old to. Oh, she's in heaven. She couldn't be happier. You and me, not so happy. Same thing with picking apples. Shoes are ruined. It's too hot, too cold. There are bees everywhere. I'm attacked by bees when I pick the apples. And again, at the end of the horrible experience, which you are not allowed to complain about, you get the privilege of paying for it. Oh, cash only. Now, we only take cash. Didn't occur to me to bring cash to the pumpkin patch. Didn't occur to me to bring cash to the apple orchard, because I'm used to buying apples from ShopRite, from Kroger, whatever local reference you want. I don't care. I have an email. It's waltermsterling@gmail, waltermsterling@gmail, and a spectacular website where you can download your very own Midnight Misfit membership card, waltersterlingshow.com, waltersterlingshow.com. And you can go there and click on Midnight Misfit. You'll be able to download and print out your Midnight Misfit membership card, which has a decoder component on it. And I give out secret messages from time to time that you can only decode, Neil Paul, with the decoder card. It's exciting, isn't it? Walter M. Sterling, Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling every night. Study books. Rusty books, get cozy with the Allen Dawn.
I'm smutty book author Theo Landon. Let me tell you a late-night story for Midnight Misfits. This is an excerpt from my book, Blazing Justice. Alex took a seat next to me. We set our glasses on the coffee table, and then I curled up against his side when he leaned back. Crazy how that case worked out after all, huh? Resting my head on his shoulder, I nestled into the space beneath his arm. I thought we weren't supposed to talk about work at times like this, I teased. He chuckled. Our jobs are part of who we are. Sometimes there's no fighting it. His grip on me tightened as he gave me a playful squeeze. Besides, justice was served. It's always nice when the good guys win for a change. The warmth of his skin and the effects of the wine lulled me into a state of pleasant serenity. We do make a pretty good team, don't we? The best crime-fighting duo this side of the Hudson, as far as I'm concerned. Just think of all we could do together. I shifted so I could gaze up at him. Mere inches separated his face from mine. The possibilities are endless. Cupping my cheek, Alex kissed me, long and slow. I lazily swirled my tongue around his, savoring the taste of him. It should have been the perfect end to a pretty good day, yet I wasn't satisfied. I needed more. Stay with me tonight, I murmured against his lips. I can't stand one more night without you. He drew back to look at me with half-lidded eyes. Are you sure? I don't want you to think I'm only after one thing here. You've already won me over with your sweet gestures and good intentions. Long ago, in fact. Emboldened by the day's successes and a couple glasses of Pinot Grigio, I slid one leg over his lap, straddling him. Make me yours. Our decadent, luxurious kisses bloomed into something more fervent. Alex's hands slipped inside my sweater and skimmed my bare back. I arched and ground against him, and a faint moan reverberated through my lip. His palms roamed across my skin, leaving fiery trails in their wake. When he reached my satin-encased chest, I gasped and writhed in his lap. Every time I moved, he rubbed against me through our clothing. I finally broke the kiss to raise my arms over my head. He pulled my sweater up and off, leaving my chest exposed to him at eye level. He smiled and let out that deep laugh that always made my insides melt. I should have known you were hiding something beneath all those prim and proper suits, he said, running his finger along the edge of the scarlet fabric. Scandalous. I love it. I blushed brighter than the color of the satin and made a mental note to consider similar purchases in the future. And what about you? My fingertips danced up the front of his shirt until I tugged at his collar. When does my imagination get satisfied? Not here. He let go of my bra and grinned up at me. Because if we're not careful, we'll wind up spending the night out here on the couch. And I think we can do better. I laughed and slid off his legs. Bedroom's that way, I said, pointing. Excellent. Alex stood up. In one swift motion, he scooped me into his strong arms and carried me in the direction I'd indicated. Giggling, I clung to his broad shoulders as we entered my room. He set me down on the bed, flung back the covers, and then attacked my mouth for another heated kiss. I leaned back against the pillows and pulled him down on top of me. The weight of him pressing me into the mattress felt divine. His lips traveled to the side of my neck, where he licked and nibbled a path over the delicate skin. I struggled to breathe evenly, losing myself in the feathery sensations. When he pushed one bra strap off my shoulder, I stopped him. Come on, detective, this isn't fair. I yanked at his shirt again, freeing the hem from the top of his pants. Let me see the results of all that fitness training they make you do. Flashing that devilish smile once more, he indulged my desire. He sat up and whipped off the shirt, flinging it to the floor. Enough moonlight streamed in through the shades to illuminate the chiseled muscles of his chest and arms. Unable to resist, I reached out and traced a line around one well-defined peck. The sight before me was better than I ever could have imagined. Skin met skin as he returned to my side. Warmth spread throughout my core when we made contact, and he turned his focus back to me. I squirmed beneath him as he peppered my chest with fluttery kisses, but he held me in place.
Unfortunately, I think I need to stop here for tonight, but you know you can always have more. That was an excerpt from my book, Blazing Justice, which is available at Amazon in paperback and on Kindle Unlimited. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon for Sterling every damn night.